Squadcast, a Tag Digital podcast.
Check the mic and make sure it sound right, boys.
Hello and welcome back to the TAD Digital Squadcast with me, Charlotte, paid social manager. And today I am joined by the whole TAD Digital social team.
Woo!
Jack, Jess, Drew, Cara, Kitty, Beth, Kelsey and Gabby. A few first timers on the pod today. So we'll get stuck right in and we will start with a little quick fire round to get to know you all a little bit better. So, Jack, Jess, Beth and Kelsey, first question: if you could have one superpower, what would it be? Beth.
Mind reading.
Yes. Interesting. Jess.
I think I would be invisible because there's loads of situations where I'd like to be a fly on the wall.
Yeah, I agree. Jack.
I'd go with flight, so I could sort of travel wherever I wanted, whenever I wanted, for free.
Yeah, I agree. And Kelsey, if you could have one superpower, what would it be?
I'd probably have healing powers to try and help people.
Oh, that's very nice. Okay, next one. If you could cook a meal for one dinner for a dinner party, what would it be, Jess?
I make a really good cauliflower curry, so maybe that.
Very nice. Beth?
I'm more of a dessert person, so I can make a good chocolate cake for afterwards.
Nice, I like that. Kelsey?
My go-to is like a sautéed potatoes side dish. It's got like breadcrumbs on top. Really nice.
We're making a full three-course meal here. And Jack, what would your meal of choice be?
I feel people are going to judge me for this, but something boozy, like a tray bake with just crowd pleaser every time.
Nice, simple but effective.
Squadcast, the Tag Digital podcast.
So today on the podcast, we'll be discussing Meta and LinkedIn platform innovations, what's working well, and future platform predictions. So let's dive right in. First up, we have the wonderful Meta. Cara, Kitty, Gabby, talk me through some of the latest Meta innovations that you have come across.
So I think one of the main things and the biggest point to discuss about Meta would be Advantage Plus. Obviously, there's quite a few things happening on the platform, some new innovations being launched. I know we've kind of touched upon Advantage Creative as part of Advantage Plus. So just some of like the standard enhancements that we're using across the campaigns.
Yeah, so we're using them, testing them on the majority of our campaigns at the moment. Before, you were only able to apply one headline and one primary text to an image, which made it quite time consuming for testing your results and everything. Whereas now, Advantage Plus Creative tests or optimizes the best image with the best primary text and pushes that to the end user.
Great, that sounds really useful actually, because I know we were forever creating loads and loads of ads to try test out copy, so that is a really good feature. Are we able to see the top performing ad creative per ad in your campaign?
Yeah, you are able to do that, yeah.
This is with Advantage Creative Plus, one of the limitations we had to start with was you were kind of putting in your text and your headlines and you weren't really able to see what was the top performing. Although across a few of the ad accounts, I think it's kind of in beta at the moment, we are seeing the breakdown performance of the ad copy and the headlines. This is currently at ad set level, so you can see which ads are performing and which variations within each ad set, which is kind of good. Something that clients always ask for. So now that we're seeing this come out, it's positive for Advantage Plus.
Yeah, definitely, because I know that was one of the problems I was facing at the start when this was first rolled out. Clients couldn't really see which one was best performing, so that's great to see it's moving in that direction. And are we seeing better results from this, do you think, in comparison to just testing out one ad copy per ad?
Yeah, I think at the moment we are, because it pushes the best performing to the highest intent user. So ultimately it is pushing out the best performing ads.
Great. So we should be recommending this to all our clients moving forward.
Yeah.
Amazing. Anything else that has come out on the Meta platform recently that we should be testing and trying?
So Advantage Plus is kind of this whole, I don't know what you'd kind of call it, but it's an overarching thing on Meta that we're seeing. So there's Advantage Creative Plus, we have Advantage Plus Audiences, so we're just seeing Advantage Plus placements. Everything's kind of moving towards Advantage Plus something. So Advantage Plus Audiences is something that's been launched on the platform recently. So we have Advantage Plus Custom Audiences and Advantage Plus Lookalike Audiences. And basically this is, if you switch it on at ad set level, it will expand your audience depending on if the platform thinks it's going to improve performance. So it will go beyond your detailed or custom targeting if we see that it's going to like get you more clicks, more conversions, lower your CPA, CPC. So it's kind of giving the platform a little bit more control, but we are seeing it as helping campaigns perform.
Great, that sounds really interesting as well. So would you say the Advantage Plus custom audience is similar to a lookalike then?
So basically what they say is if you have an Advantage Plus custom audience switched on and you're running lookalikes, it will separate the audiences so you won't have audience overlap. But I think Advantage Plus custom audience is, it's not, I think, yeah, you could probably compare it similarly to a lookalike of, say, your data or your website traffic. And we're not entirely sure how much it's expanding or how it's finding these users, but I guess the more information that's fed through the Metapixel, the more the platform knows about your audience and the more it can kind of push your ads in front of users with intent of clicking or converting.
Yeah, definitely. And again, so we should really be trying and testing this throughout our campaigns going forward.
Yeah, I think it's really good to obviously launch your campaigns with these features switched off and then use them as an optimization. If you are switching on, it's always good to kind of take note of the date that you've turned it on and then compare performance and use that as a way of testing.
Cool, sounds really good. And it sounds like Meta are really expanding their Advantage Plus feature, like you mentioned. Do you think there'll be more coming from that feature down the line?
Yeah, I think there seems to be stuff coming out and new innovations and optimizations on the platform. So I think, yeah, we're just going to continue to see Advantage Plus grow. Hopefully we can continue trialing and testing features of Advantage Plus, and they'll continue to benefit our campaigns.
Definitely. Very nice. And Gabby, I saw recently when I was creating ads, a new box appear for multi-advertiser ads. Are you able to tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, of course. I would call it maybe one of the more mysterious new innovations on Meta. So these are ads that appear underneath an ad. It appears as a carousel of kind of competitor ads.
Okay.
That obviously it's something that's a bit more focused on products and e-commerce. It's for, like, you'll get audience that is a lot more in the buying mindset, kind of browsing. There's a lot of benefit to it. You can reach, again, people in the buying mindset. Your products are going to be appearing in the middle of your industry competitors, which the healthy competition is always, you know, it's been kind of good psychological marketing tactic in the past and throughout the years. But the only other thing, kind of speaking about numbers, is that these ads are going to have a really low CPM. Because you are buying into a shared marketing placement. It's not just your ad. So for businesses that don't have as much of a budget, it could be something to consider.
Yeah, definitely. Is this kind of similar to like not competitor targeting, but along those lines, because you're then putting yourself and your ad out there next to your competitors. So essentially it is a type of competitor targeting, which is interesting. Is it something that we're using on our ads just now in our campaigns?
So at the moment, it's a very new automatic feature. You can really have a lot of control for it. So the kind of recommendation is that only more like a e-commerce use it, mm-hmm. really. Or I'd say it's more of a always on approach for e-commerce businesses, for services, and for maybe local businesses that have competitors in the area as well.
Yeah.
For event industry, there isn't going to be enough kind of competition. I think the algorithm is not going to match it that well to like any other, like I think they're going to just think, oh, here's a all the events happening, yeah. and they might not be in your kind of area.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things with obviously running event-only ads, event-specific ads, and having features like your multi-advertisers, the lack of control that we know what that's associating our ads with. And obviously we can't tell Meta, this is an event ad, so only, you know, connect it with event-associated other ads. So like you say, it's the control, and it's making sure that you're only applying it to campaigns that are it's really relevant and that it is going to benefit.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so maybe it's something to look out for in a few months, years time, and when it's a little bit more developed and something we can maybe take advantage of.
Squadcast, the Tag Digital podcast.
So next up we have LinkedIn innovations. Now tell me, what weird and wonderful innovations has LinkedIn come out with in the last few months?
So just on my end, some kind of recent successes that I've been having has been with the document ads, which is a type of sponsored content, allows you to promote documents directly to a user's LinkedIn feed. Kind of the great thing about it that we've been seeing is that users can read and download the content without actually leaving the platform, so it leads to a higher level of engagement. You can kind of use it for a lot of different things, maybe like ebook downloads or kind of case studies, for example. But I've recently been seeing a lot of success with exhibitor promotion. So kind of getting people who have the intent of exhibiting at the event. And because it's so great, because it doesn't have kind of, it's a softer touch point, if that makes sense. So
yeah.
They're not necessarily committing to buying a stand at the event, but it's something where your sales team can then jump in with that lead and create kind of a tailored purchase path towards it.
Yeah.
We've run a couple of tests where top of funnel would be doing sales brochure downloads, and then at remarketing level doing the regular website conversions, and we've seen kind of an immediate change between both of them. So we're seeing kind of 10 times the amount of conversions with sales document downloads, but kind of a 98% less CPA, which is fantastic to see. And we're kind of always ending that test earlier because of the results that we're seeing.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. I guess as well with XPROM, if they're downloading a document, they're already finding out a little bit more information about the event. And then by the time they get contacted by that sales team, they're already a little bit more clued up on what to expect and what they're going to be contacted about, which again qualifies them even more. Great. So what type of, you mentioned using them for XPROM. Is there anything else that you've used these for or would recommend using these for?
Yeah, we had an always on kind of campaign where they were downloading just an ebook, and then it would place the user into a funnel and then go forward with that. So it's been really good across the board, especially with kind of lead gen forms.
Yeah, definitely. Really interesting. For XPROM, what sort of document would you recommend the advertiser using?
We've mainly been using sales brochure downloads because, as you said, it does give them a bit more information about the event. There's kind of an intent behind it, so they are kind of aware that it's regarding exhibiting at the event, so you have a much higher intent within your leads.
Yeah. Cool. Sounds really exciting. And are you using these on many of your campaigns just now?
Yeah, we're using it across a few different brands, a few different sectors, and we've seen the same results straight through the industries.
Cool. So something we'll all definitely need to get on board moving forward and recommending to our clients.
Yeah, and it's interesting from my end as well. I've ran it a couple times, particularly with ads that are giving users content with the aim of them subscribing to a newsletter for one of my clients, and that's been pretty successful as well compared to driving them off the website, because it allows them to stay engaged in an easy and kind of understandable way, yeah. without having to navigate to a website where they could potentially not be optimized for mobile or where they feel it's too many extra steps. So it's a good way of driving that engagement without scaring off your user from registering as like a lead.
Yeah, definitely. I think keeping on them on the platform as well is something all advertising platforms want us to do as well. We don't want to be navigating them off the platform. So, yeah, very interesting, and something I'll definitely be using. Moving on from document ads, sorry, is there anything else LinkedIn has brought out recently that we've been trying?
Another thing that the platform's been trying more recently is a thing called work email validation, which is really good, useful to use on lead gen forms, and it just means that a LinkedIn user needs to verify their email, it needs to match the email, like their company's domain, and that just helps to improve the lead quality and kind of get rid of if there was any like spam on the ads, and it just helps us to generate better lead quality, and a lot of clients are happy with that. We've started to roll out in the last few months, especially if clients have been seeing not so good lead quality coming in initially.
Yeah, oh, that's very interesting. And yeah, definitely a way to improve leads. I think especially for ex-prom campaigns, where we're kind of needing a contact on the other end, that's going to be, yeah, of quality. So would you recommend this for all lead gen campaigns or just your exhibitor promotion?
I think it's more, yeah, it's really useful for the exhibitor promotion because you do need that good quality on the other end. And I've not used them for all campaigns yet. I've maybe used it more as an optimization if initially when the initially if the leads are coming in and there's a few that aren't the best quality, that's something you can look at to improve them. But at VizProm right now, I'm leaving it without it initially.
Yeah, cool. I actually had a similar thing on one of my campaigns where our lead quality wasn't the greatest, and we've now switched to that work email validation, which has increased the performance of and quality of the leads, which is great. Have you got any results from any of the campaigns you've run this in? Any feedback from your clients?
We've only started rolling out, but we've had one recently where we did have good leads come in, but they weren't maybe all necessarily, it was an ex-prom campaign, so they weren't maybe all necessarily the best quality. So we started rolling out the validation, and that's when the clients hasn't had any issues ever since. So it has worked, but I think it is more of a case-by-case basis and just seeing how it works for each client.
Yep. And so how does this work? Does it then just deny any email that's maybe like Gmail based or?
So what it does is that a user on their LinkedIn profile needs to get their email validated, and it usually needs to match the domain of their company. So if their company was a Gmail user, and then if it matches that and it's got the validation, it'll allow them to complete the lead gen form, and it just makes them a lot more qualified than if it was maybe like more of a Hotmail email or something like that.
Yeah. That really makes sense. Cool. That's again then something we should maybe all be testing in our exhibitor promotion campaigns for sure, for lead generation.
Squadcast, the Tag Digital podcast.
Cool. Moving on. I saw recently when setting up a campaign, I got the option of a campaign budget optimization feature. Drew, can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Certainly. So this is a feature that already exists within platforms like Meta, where effectively it allows you to combine different kind of campaigns under one heading that share a budget, and it places the budget where performance suits it. That's how it works for Meta. It works effectively the same for LinkedIn, where you say you have three different types of campaigns, you set them all under this one campaign group with campaign budget optimization active. You can only choose one goal when you're doing this. So if you want to mix, say, lead generation and conversions, you're not going to be able to do that with campaign budget optimization. But the positives to it are that if you have three campaigns running on that same goal, your spend is going to be far more optimized versus setting that £10 minimum a day for three different campaigns and then just manually adjusting where you see that performance.
Yeah, I was going to ask, do we then need a minimum spend per campaign when using this feature, or do you set like an overall budget in the campaign group level?
You can set an overall budget, but it still gives you a minimum. So on individual campaigns, when you're not using this, the minimum is £10 a day. But what LinkedIn will do when you use CBO is that you'll, when you enter your daily spend, where it splits it amongst how many other campaigns you have under that group, it will give you a minimum that you need to run that. This is consistent with that kind of £10 minimum a day. So you're going to see similar spends regardless of whether you use this or not, but it's a better way of, I say it's a better way of spending the money versus just seeing what happens.
Yeah, definitely. And then I guess you would still need to separate out your new data audiences from your remarketing then to ensure a even spend across both campaigns.
Yes, you still have to set up your campaigns in a similar way with when you're segmenting them. It doesn't mean you put all of your targeting options into one campaign. You still do the effectively the same setup.
Cool, very interesting. And have you had the chance to use this feature yet?
I have. I've used it with a campaign that I've recently set up, and it's worked pretty well for me thus far.
Cool. And I guess it optimizes before towards your objective. So it will, if you've selected conversions, for example, it'll push budget towards the campaign that's giving you the most conversions.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Very interesting.
And speaking of the campaign targeting options I was talking about before, there's a new type of targeting we're able to use within LinkedIn as well. This is called predictive audiences, and they're similar to lookalikes, which are already existing within LinkedIn, but they're based on different actions, and you can choose a geolocation for them. So, for example, this was already a thing on Meta, where when you create a lookalike of an audience, say you're creating a lookalike of web traffic, you set the percentage. So that's the amount of people that you have in the audience, and the lower that number is, the more similar it's going to be to the base you're creating it off. But then you set a location as well, like i.e. a country. LinkedIn's lookalikes didn't have the country targeting feature. You just select an audience you want a lookalike of, and it will use the targeting that you have in your campaign. Whereas for this, you can set it for a couple goals. So one of them is people who take a certain conversion action. Say it'll create a lookalike of all purchasers for the entire ad account. Another one is a data list upload, so that's pretty self-explanatory. And then there's also people who fill out a lead gen form. So you can create lookalikes of any of these three types of audiences, but then you can, unlike with the traditional lookalikes, you can set this at a geo level, so you can get quite specific to even, say, a city. And you can also then set the size similar to how you do in a Meta with the percentages.
Yeah, that's really interesting. See, LinkedIn is definitely going down the same sort of route as Meta with these sort of innovations. Have you tested this out yet, or is it still kind of in beta mode?
I've not seen this on all my ad accounts. I've only seen it on a couple, and I've tried to test it where I can. For example, on one of my life sciences campaigns, I'm running a lookalike of all, or a predictive audience of all purchasers in the United States. But it does need that same minimum audience size that you see with all kind of data list uploads on the platform. So there are a lot of cases where I would like to use it, but I just don't have the data build yet to do that.
Yeah, so something we could maybe definitely use in the future once that's got a little bit stronger and we have the data behind those things. Cool. Amazing. Thank you for those updates. Looks like LinkedIn is definitely making positive moves in creating stronger campaign structures and also going down a similar path to Meta, which is what we like to see.
Squadcast. The Tag Digital Podcast.
Amazing. That rounds up our Tag Digital Squadcast of Meta, LinkedIn innovations, future predictions, and what's working well on the platform. Thank you very much to the whole of the Tag Digital Social team for joining me.
Thank you, Charlotte, for hosting. And thanks, everyone on mobiles or laptops for listening.
Squadcast, the Tag Digital Podcast.